जनको वैदेह कूर्चा अवसर्पन उवाच नमस्ते स्तु याज्ञवल्क्य. Another occasion is mentioned here when Janaka was seated on his gorgeous seat. Yajnavalkya comes and the king gets up from his seat, offers his homage to the great master that comes and requests the great master Yajnavalkya, saying, "Instruct me, teach me, I require illumination." Namaste to Yajnavalkya, salutation to you, says Yajnavalkya. Anu ma shati, please advise me, instruct me, teach me, give me lesson. Sahovacha yathavai samran mahantam adhvanam eshyan ratham va navam va samadadita. एवमेवैताभिः उपनिषद्भिः समाहितात्मा असि एवं वृन्दारक आढ्यः सन् अधीतवेदः उक्तोपनिषत्कः इतः विमुच्यमानः क्व गमिष्यसि. याज्ञवल्क्य सेस्, युवर् हैनेस्, यु वाण्ट् मी टु गिव् यु इन्स्ट्रक्षन् टु टीच् यु टु प्रोवैड् यु वित् लेसन्स्. यु आर् इण्डीड् अ ग्रेट् पर्सन्. You are a king, you are an emperor. And just as a person who is to go on a pilgrimage or a tour prepares himself very well with all the equipments necessary so that he may be safe in the journey, likewise, Your Highness has equipped yourself with the knowledge of the Vedas, the wisdom of the Upanishads, having studied them all very well, and you have become a very honored person in this country. You are a very rich person. You are the richest person in the whole country because you are king and you are respected as such. But I ask you one question. Being so honored and respected in this whole land of yours, being so rich and well placed in society, having learned so much, the entire Vedas and the Upanishads, do you know what will happen to you after you leave this body? Where will you go? This Janaka doesn't know. Where will I go after I leave this body? If you do not know this, what is the use of your wealth? What is the use of your learning? What is the use of your kingship? What is the benefit I have with the honor that you have from society? People may respect you, honor you, keep you on a high pedestal, but you die next moment. What happens to you? You do not know this. What is the good of all this? Ko gamishasi naham tad bhagavan veda. Master, I do not know. I cannot answer this question. Tell me, this is a very serious matter indeed. What will happen to me after death? I do not know. Please tell me, give me this secret knowledge as to what happens to an individual when he casts off the body. Naham tad bhagavan veda yatra gamishyami iti athavai teham tad vachyami yatra gamishyasi iti bravit bhagavan iti. Yajnavalkya says, well, I shall tell you. Well, please tell me. This is what Janaka replies. Now starts a series of studies in this Upanishad, which is of great importance from the point of view of the analysis of the self. It has some connection with the theme of the Mandukya Upanishad, but it is dealt with in a different manner altogether, not in the way in which Mandukya Upanishad treats of the subject. We cannot understand what will happen to us in the future or after we die unless we know what we are at present. because our future is connected with our present, just as it is connected with the past. What is the state that we are in at this moment? What is our condition? If this is clear to us, it may be possible to have an idea as to what will happen to us also in the future. But we have, unfortunately, a very, very wrong notion about ourselves, even in the present moment. It is obvious because of the fact that we consider that we are social entities, Mr. and Mrs., men and women, coming from various countries, living in various lands as nationals of various places, with the physical needs, social requirements, and desire for comforts. If we live a socially acceptable, well-placed life, that would be a worthwhile life indeed. Is this not a definition of our good life? But this is a thorough misrepresentation of fact. The fact that we are individuals is only a phenomenon. It cannot be regarded as really a fact. It is not a fact as such. Our individuality, our personality, our desires and our relationships with people and things, all these are certain conditions through which we are passing. They are only certain circumstances that have come upon us in the passage of time due to certain associations and various factors which lie mostly beyond the ken of our understanding. Even the existence of our personality, this body of ours, is something very inscrutable. It is positioned by the operation of various forces. To give you only a very gross example, not going deep into philosophical themes, we know very well how much we are influenced by the movement of planets around the sun. A fact which is physically demonstrable, yet a fact which does not come to the vision of any individual. We do not know how much we are influenced by the movement of the earth around the sun. Suppose the earth moves in the opposite direction from tomorrow. You know what difference it will make to our life. And the various other planets which move around the sun have a tremendous influence upon us. And not merely astronomers of ancient times, but even modern scientists have come to the conclusion that even our physical substance, this bodily individuality, can be regarded as nothing but a cosmic stuff which has been projected by the forces of nature, emanated from interstellar space, and the body can be reduced to ethereal substance so that it loses its substantiality and solidity, a thing to which we cling so much. This is a modern experiment and demonstration, corroborated by ancient astronomical discoveries. So that it is great stupidity on our part to imagine that even this physical body is independent and can stand on its own legs. It cannot. It has been controlled since aeons by the movements of planets. Not merely that, it is even constituted by the very substance of natural energies who have combined in a particular shape or a form for certain purposes under certain conditions. So our concept of ourselves, our concept of body and individuality and personality, our notion of society, our notion of the aim of life itself is topsy-turvy. Everything is upside down. So under these conditions of ignorance, how is it possible for any one of us to know what will happen to us after death? That was the condition of Janaka, and that is the state of the mind of anyone. So Yajnavalkya takes the mind of Janaka gradually, stage by stage, by an analysis of the waking state, and then going deeper into the implications of human experience. இந்தோஹ வை நாம ஏஷ யோயம் தட்சிணி அக்ஷன் புருஷஹ. இட் இஸ் த பிலீஃப் ஆஃப் தி ஏன்ஷியன்ட் மாஸ்டர்ஸ் தட் இன் த வெகி ஸ்டேட் அவர் செல்ஃப் இஸ் கான்சென்ட்ரேட் இன் த ஐ. மேபி பிகாஸ் ஆஃப் த ரீசன் that our mind is predominantly active through the eyes in the waking state. And it is also opined by the Upanishads that the right eye is predominantly active, something which has not been understood properly by people. The activity of the right eye is supposed to be a little more emphasized, and greater stress is laid upon it. Then the left one also will be mentioned subsequently, but presently for the purpose of explaining the collaborative action of the right eye and the left eye, the Upanishads mentions that the self is pointedly manifest in the right eye in the waking state, and we call him Indha. Upanishad calls this Purusha. This self, active in the right eye in the waking state, as Indha, illumined or illuminating, lustrous for various reasons. Why is this self in the eye called Indha or radiant or lustrous? Firstly, the reason may be that the self does not directly operate through the eye. It operates through the mind only. And the mind acts through the senses in respect of objects outside. There is a series maintained, as it were, in the activity of the personality in connection with the objects outside. The deepest propelling energy is the self, or the Atman, of course. It gets entangled, connected with the personality, and that becomes the individual soul, jiva as we call it. This jiva consciousness is the basis for the activity of the mind. And the mind, borrowing the consciousness of the Atman through the manifested form of it as jiva, acts through the sense organs, particularly the eye in the waking state, because it is the eye that is mostly active in the waking condition, as we all very well know. And it is very eager to contact objects, very enthusiastic, always. It is very curious to see various things, to find out what are the objects which it can desire and obtain. And because of the enthusiasm that is charged through the eye, it is supposed to be illumined with the activity of desire. For that reason also it can be called Indha. Also, the other reason is that the presence of an object outside is necessary for the activity of the senses. If the objects do not exist, the senses cannot act. So the light of the senses, particularly of the eye, depends upon the connection of the eye with the object, and so it is lustrous or radiant on account of the presence of the object in front of it, the proximity of its corresponding object. So this Purusha in the right eye, this self manifest in the right eye is called Indha, which means radiant. Dakshine Achan Purusha Tam Va Etam Indham Santam Indra Ityacha Chate Parochenaiva Paroksha Priyahi Deva Pratyaksha Dvijaha. This Indha is called Indra by a change of accent. And the Upanishad says, gods do not like to be called directly by their names. No respectable person likes to be called by his own or her own name, as you know very well. You always indirectly mention this, that and so on. So it is said that the celestials do not like to be directly accosted by their own names. They dislike immediacy of approach. They always like indirect approach. Maybe because of their impersonality, and so they do not like any personal approach directly. And therefore, Indra, who is the radiant, is designated as Indra, as we call a person by a different name, if we do not want to call the person by the direct name. In the left eye also the same activity is taking place. The right eye and the left eye join together in a single activity of perception. And symbolically, the functions of the right eye and the left eye are regarded as something which can be compared with the joint activity in a family of husband and wife. They join together in a single focus of attention. Likewise, the principle in the right eye and the left eye join together in activity of perception. And the Upanishad says, they are like the symbols of the Virat and his Shakti. The Virat and his force are manifest to the right eye and the left eye. Atha etad vame achini purusha rupam e purusha rupam esha asya patni virat tayoresha samstavo ya esho antar hridaya akasha. The propulsion for the activity of this twofold consciousness, Virat and his Shakti, manifest through the right eye and the left eye, comes from the heart. It is the heart that is the root of this perception. And so when the activity of perception is withdrawn, the sensation goes to its abode, its own source. The mind returns to its source. That is the meaning. The mind it is that is active through the right eye and the left eye in the waking state. And when that activity ceases for any reason whatsoever, it goes back. So this joint activity of the right eye and the left eye gets absorbed into the heart, in the ether of the heart. Hridaya akasha atha ena yoho etad annam. When the mind withdraws itself into the heart, it does not require any other external food to maintain itself. That means to say, it does not stand in need of objects of sense. In the waking state, it needs objects outside, and it cannot exist without them. But in the internal state to which it gets withdrawn, after the waking condition is over, it does not stand in need of any external food. When you are dreaming, or when you are asleep, you do not require the support of anything outside. You can stand by your own self internally, by some energy that is yourself. Ye esho antarhadaye lohita pindaha atha enayo etat pravaranam yadetad antarhadaye jalakamiva enayo esha sruti sancharani yaisha hridaya durdhva nadyucharati. The Upanishad here tells us some intricate physiology or anatomy of the heart. In the heart, there is a space, as it were, which we call the ether of the heart, into which the mind withdraws itself when it is fatigued of external activity in the waking condition. And this fleshy substance that we call the heart is constituted of various parts. It has a pericarp, and that pericarp of the heart may be regarded as the enclosure, the abode for the mind to lie down in peace and restfulness. And inside this heart there is a network of nerves or nerve currents. This network is the passage for the movement of the mind inside the heart for the fulfillment of its own wishes by dream, wishes which it could not fulfill in the waking state for certain reasons. This passage which is of the nature of a narrow current is described in this manner. Yatha keshaha sahasradha bhinna evam asya hita hita nama nadya antarhadaye pratishtita. Suppose there is a hair of the head, very thin hair. You divide this hair into 1,000 parts, lengthwise. What would be the thinness of that hair? The hair itself is so thin, you can't even see it. And if it is lengthwise split into 1,000 parts, 1,000th part of that hair is perhaps the comparative thickness of this nerve which is in the heart, through which the mind is moving. So subtle is that nerve current. And these nerve currents in the heart through which the mind moves in dream are called hitas. Hita nama nadya. They are very conducive to the mind. So they are called hita. Antar hridaye pratishthitaha bhavanti. Eta bhiruva etad astravati. Tasmad esha pravivyuktaharatara evaiva bhavati asmat shariraad atmanaha. In this condition of the location of the mind in the nerve currents called the hita in the dreaming state, there is no need for any physical food. You enjoy ethereal food in the state of dream, and you are as happy in dream as you are in waking, though you have nothing physical to contact with. When the self enters its deepest abode, passing through the states of waking and dream, it gets connected with all its natural associates, from whom it was disconnected due to its special attachment to its body and to its waking individuality. In the waking state, we are practically dissociated from all the friends of the universe. We stand alone, unbefriended, due to intense egoism, which identifies itself with the body and assumes a false importance. With the erroneous notion that it does not stand in need of anybody's help. This is the principle of egoism, the essence of personality. The universe is a friend, and it is constituted of innumerable types of force, all which are our benefactors. But the ego does not want this benefit. It is not intending to take help from anyone outside itself. And nothing can be so unreasonable as ego. It has no logic except its own. And suffering is the consequence of this sort of assertion, which is patently seen in waking life, that in all the efforts that we make for the purpose of achieving desired ends in life, there is only sweating and toiling and anxiety and a feeling of frustration in the end. It is rarely that people go to bed with a feeling that something worthwhile has been done. The reason is the tying up of our efforts to the ego, which is the ruling principle of the body. The ego cannot succeed, though it thinks that no one else can succeed. But this ego is boiled down to an ethereal permeating substance when it enters the state of dream and especially sleep. What happens in this condition of getting down into one's own bottom, away from the affirmations of the ego and the vehemences of the body? Then the universal pranic energies, forces of nature, become the limbs of one's own cosmic body. The pranas are not only inside our bodies, they are powers which operate throughout the universe. And so, the vital prana that is sustaining the whole world, all creation, becomes part and parcel of one's being, and sustenance comes from all sides. This is what happens when we enter into sleep. It is because of the fact that we dissolve our personality practically in sleep and stand open to the reception of energies and powers from outside that we get up refreshed from sleep. Without dinner, without lunch, without breakfast, without any kind of nourishing element in sleep, we get up as if we have eaten well. Tired people wake up with a freshness of personality. From where has this freshness come? You have not taken any tonic, no medicine, no foodstuff. You have only closed your eyes and forgotten yourself. The mere fact of your forgetfulness of your own self has become the source of sustenance and energy to your being. The energy has come not because you had something with you in sleep. You had nothing. The energy has come merely due to the fact that you had forgotten yourself. The forgetfulness of personality is the secret of success. And the more you affirm your personality, the farther you are from the possibilities of success in life. So the pranas become the wings of the bird of consciousness in the state of sleep. And they become the directive principles. Tasya prachi dik prancha pranaha, dakshinadi dakshine pranaha, pratiji dik pratyancha pranaha, udiji dik udanja pranaha, urdhvadi udhva pranaha, avachi dik avancha pranaha, sarva dishaha sarve pranaha. Every direction becomes a vital force for you. Whatever you touch becomes your friend. And any air that blows from any direction becomes the force that sustains you. The eastern direction becomes the energy that flows to you from the east. It is not merely a direction of space. Empty space does not exist. So what we regard as empty space or merely a direction in the horizon is not merely that. It is an emptiness only to our incapacitated vision. It is fullness by itself and plenty with energy, prana shakti. All space is filled with prana. It is not void or a nihil. And so energy begins to flow from the eastern direction. Energy begins to flow from the western direction. Energy flow from the southern direction. Energy comes from the north, from the top and the bottom. From 10 directions, energy enters you the moment you become open to its inflow into your being. There is no effort needed on our part to get anything in this world ultimately. The effort that is necessary is simple: to become open to the inflow of things that are already there, that inundate everything, that flood all corners, and that are ready to serve us wherever we are. The universe is never poor, it is always rich. It is never bereft of resources. But we seem to be poor, poverty-stricken, emaciated, and forsaken for faults which are obvious enough. the fault of the ego, which affirms its own importance and value, which is really a zero. Its existence is a travail and a great misfortune, on account of which it suffers. The ego suffers right from birth to death. It is always in a state of anxiety. But when this ego dissolves in a deeper abode which it reaches, passing from the waking condition, the directions themselves become energizing forces. Very strange indeed. You do not require persons. You do not require celestials to come and help you. Even the quarters, even the directions, even space itself will sustain you with the energy which is embosomed in its own self. Sarva adishaha sarve pranaha. Every corner of the world becomes energy for you. And it is energy that you breathe into your nostrils and withdraw into your own being. Strength incarnate do you become on account of your openness to the inflow of forces outside. The secret of this is the Atman within ultimately. Why is this that space should protect you, prana should flow into you, merely because you descend into the subliminal levels of your own being. The reason is that at the bottom there is the Atman which is all. It is not the prana as an independent entity that works. What you call the prana, the energy, the shakti is nothing but the Atman that works. All energy is Atma Shakti ultimately. And so your proximity to the Atman it is that gives you the refreshness, refreshing free feeling in sleep. The energy that you seem to imbibe or acquire in sleep and the joy that you feel there and even a reluctance to wake up from sleep merely because of the fullness that you experience there, the completeness and the fact of your being embraced as it were by all the forces of nature. That bottommost level you are about to contact in the state of sleep. Why about to contact? You have already contacted. You have touched it. And it has given you a shock. That shock is the bliss that you experience in sleep. And what is that principle called the Atman, which you are touching in the state of deep sleep, going down below the waking condition of personality, that the Upanishad says, sa esha neti neti atma agrihya. Nobody can say what it is. No one knows where you are born. And it is impossible to say as to how it is that you gain so much of joy and strength from that source. It cannot be described. It can be described only by a negative definition of it as it is not the body. It is not any friend of the world. It is not an object of sense. It is not the pranas as you think of it in the physical body. It is not even the senses, not the mind, not the intellect. Nothing that you regard as worthwhile. It is something transcendent. That something is therefore other than whatever you see with your eyes, think with your mind, understand with your intellect. Other than anything that you regard as existent in this world. It is transcendent being. So it can be defined only as what it is not and not as what it is. No one knows what it is. We can say it is not this, but we cannot say it is this. Neti neti atma agrahya naishiryat grahyate. Who can grasp it? No sense can grasp. No mind can grasp. No understanding or intellect can grasp. It is ungraspable. That is the atma. Ashiryo naishiryate, asango naisajyate, asido navyatate. Narishyati. This is a repetition of what has already been mentioned earlier. It is ungraspable and unattached to things, impossible to contact it in any manner whatsoever. It doesn't come in contact with anything. It has no dual outside. It has no sorrow. It never knows what sorrow is. Janaka you have attained to this fearless state, says Yajnavalkya. Abhayam vai janaka praptosi. Fearlessness is Brahman. And you have reached to that fearless abode of Brahman. By your inquiries, by your studies, by your contemplations, by your searches, by your absorptions in meditation, you have reached that supremely fearless abode of Brahman. Janaka says, sage Yajnavalkya. Sahovacha Janakaha Vaideha Abhayamtva Agachadat Yajnavalkya. Great Master, may this fearless abode also be a blessing to you. Janaka is immensely pleased. So he reciprocates the grace that has been bestowed upon him by the sage by saying, may that fearlessness come upon you too. May that divine absolute bless us both. Bhagavan Abhayam Vedayase Namaste. Prostration to you. I am deeply blessed to hear all this from you. Ime Videha, I am Aham Asmi. Here is the kingdom of Videha at your disposal. And I am here as your servant. Everything has been surrendered by the disciple to the Guru. The kingdom is here. You take it and you take me also as your slave. This knowledge that you have given to me is more than all this wealth that I have in the form of this empire and my own personal self. Hari Om Tat Sat.